Hi, this is Joe Satriani, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalhead, Scott here.
And Richie.
And welcoming you to episode 596 of that which we call Focus on Metal. I think I might have mentioned it on Twitter or somewhere along the line, but I'm pretty sure now that for those of you that had been following us on Amazon or any of the other 30 some odd carriers of us, I think I've got the feed fixed for them now. I noticed when I popped up episode 595 that all the streams on everything but Apple seemed to stop at 593. So I went back, went through the code, figured out what the problem was, and fixed that. And it looks like it then updated 594, 595 up on the streams everywhere. So I apologize for that. But it looks like we're back in action everywhere now, which is a good thing. So anyways, with that out of the way, how you doing, man?
I'm good.
Good, good.
You couldn't have asked me to fix any of that shit. I wouldn't have a clue.
I've been trying to do some various housekeeping things to, I think on 593-4, I did mention the fact that, you know, when we went to the new website provider a few years ago, because, by the way, GoDaddy sucks, unlimited means only unlimited in their terms and not really unlimited. It's almost like the, if it's a price lock, how can it be a lock? But anyways, when I did that, there was a bunch of episode descriptions and stuff that from the early days back 2010, 2011, 2012, probably some stuff into 13 where it kind of got lost to the shuffle. And my just wanted getting a new website up and going, I had opted to not go back and do that. So I have been able to find a lot of the bits and pieces, and I'm starting to at least right now put the descriptions up there. So if you wanted to know, hey, what did Focus on Metal do the first year that we were a going concern?
Well, I wasn't on it.
No, you weren't. though you at least now the descriptions and everything are up there. Probably at some point, maybe I'll get audio loaded as well. But I'm trying to start to do that and fix some of the other stuff as I have time. So yeah, it's interesting. Moving target.
Yeah. Move on. Next topic.
Yeah. So, busy summer. Yeah. I mean, it's good you've been able to make it down. And, busy to the point that, as I mentioned when I put up the last episode, was as I'm mixing it, I realized, holy shit, we didn't put a single episode out for July.
Yeah, you're right.
It was nothing. But I didn't realize it till I was actually putting that episode together that we had nothing for July. So, it's just been busy.
We had good weather and life.
Yeah.
And things got in the way, but I have a couple of interviews coming. Discussion episodes. We'll have 600 episodes done by the end of the year.
Maybe. We're going.
We still have to finish the Iron Maiden discography.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
We have two albums to go, and it's the most recent two, so maybe that's why we're not doing them.
Speaking of that, we're not big fans. Did you hear anything about 2024 vinyl reissues?
For who?
Maiden.
No.
No. I've heard some rumble about them doing 2024 reissues, but
I don't think there's anything because the
rumble I got about it from some people was it's the 2015 remasters and they just like the runout numbers have changed. Like there's, as far as I know, no difference. So yeah, I didn't know if you heard anything about it, but anyways,
there wasn't a problem with getting that final.
No.
That's what
no.
I'm saying. It wasn't a
no,
limited
they weren't
run.
Limited or anything.
Yeah.
No.
So I don't see the hook.
Yeah, I don't know. It kind of went by my radar, but I was like, I've got all those. I'm good on those.
No, you're not. I know you. You're the guy that has a 16 different versions of Invincible Shield.
It's true. It's every single version. Yes. Got one whole crate over there that's nothing but Invincible Shield. That doesn't include the CD versions.
Oh.
And the couple of versions at Nikki's house, too.
So, oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways.
just as well, the album's not crap.
Oh, fantastic album.
Yeah, it's a good album, yeah. It's good, solid. Right, so we're here to talk about... So one of the things we did do, it's not that we didn't do anything.
No,
that's true. We went to see some shows. Even I went to see a show.
Wow, it's a miracle.
So I figured what we'll do, there's two you went to see. And when I talk about shows, I mean like the big rock shows of the summer yeah. that are currently out there.
Yeah.
So you went to see two of them and I went to see one. So I figure what we'll do is you do one and then I'll do the one I went to and then we can do the other one.
Okay.
Your other one. So
yeah.
you can go first. You can pick either or.
I'll go in chronological order.
Okay, that's fine.
That makes it easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sammy Hagar, Best of All Worlds tour. Fantastic. Fantastic show.
Who opened? Loverboy. Any yeah. good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were still spot on. Always put on a great show. A lot of people there that were really into that as well. I actually wore my Texas Jam Raglan, which that was the year that... It was the 5150 tour, so Van Halen was headlining, and Loverboy opened. So I purposely wore that shirt.
The original?
Yeah, and people were like, holy shit!
Put it on eBay.
But yeah, they were good.
Who's in the band other than Mike Dean? Is it any of the originals?
It's pretty much the same guys, except I believe the drummer's changed. Other than that, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But
so
it's
the drummer, is the old drummer alive?
No idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a band I keep up with.
How does he sound?
Great. He actually sounds really good.
Does he?
Oh, yeah. Big as a house, but sounds great.
Yeah, he is a big bloke now.
Yeah. He doesn't make any bones about it. And, you know, it is what it is. But
they got the songs.
The voice is still there. Absolutely. So, they did really well. But the Hagar, that could quite possibly be one of the best shows I've seen in a while. Like, no bones about it.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
It was for one, Xfinity was sold out. It was frickin' packed, which was great. Everybody was into it. Great song set on there as well with a good mix of stuff. It was cool with when Satch did like the solo spot for himself. He did a Satch song. So Sammy went off stage and the whole band jammed a Satch Satriani song. Yeah. So it was great. Rather than just like a noodle or something. So that was pretty good.
Must have been interesting having Satch Boogie with a rhythm section of Jason Bonham and Michael Anthony.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad you
bring
that up.
I said John Bonham.
Because at one point I had leaned over to Nikki and I went, what's incredible about what we're listening to right now? Of course, she couldn't hear me, so she asked me again later, what the hell did you say to me? That... This is the closest I've heard the drums sound to Jeff Campitelli in years. Through all the drummers that, because there's a sound that Jeff had.
I've seen Satriani with Jeff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Marco Miniman, I think, was the last drummer I saw him with.
Yep.
And I don't know who else he's had since Jeff.
He's had Kenny with him. He's
Kenny
had,
Aronoff, yeah.
Who's the guy on... It was a guy that played with Beck, Jeff Peck, and he had him with him. Great. They're all great drummers. But I have this thing where I really like the way that Campitelli played with Satriani. And Bonham was freaking nailing it. And it sounded so good
he's
with
great,
him.
He's a great drummer.
It really, really
he
sounded
he really
great.
He really is a great drummer.
What was also cool on his bass drum heads, he had black and white pictures of his dad.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it looked really cool. But so that was spot on. Like I said, everything else that they did, obviously Sammy's a great showman. There was good interaction. That's another thing that I like too, is that, you know, Sammy has this habit, and I've seen him do it in other shows. People are throwing shit up on stage. And sometimes he might throw something around his neck or put it on a microphone stand, but at some point he gets back around and he signs it and he gives it back to the person that gave it to him. And there was points where there was so much stuff coming up that Michael Anthony took over vocals so Sammy could get through his backlog of autographing shit
and Michael
throwing
can sing.
It out. And yeah, he did, because he did Ain't Talking About Love. Sammy went off for a while. They did Ain't Talking About Love. Sounded great. So yeah, overall, just a solid like end to end everything you wanted to do. And it was also cool that, because you know, Sammy always like to throw like a Montrose song in, but this time he didn't do Bad Motor Scooter. He didn't do Rock Candy. It's Space Nation number 9, which, you know, I've loved that song. I mean, George Lynch covered that song on one of his albums, and that's such a great Montrose tune. So it was great they pulled that out. They also did a Chickenfoot song, since you basically had Chickenfoot.
Which one? Oh, yeah.
Down the Drain.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was okay. It was great to have, like this whole good mix of like, almost like career retrospective. So great show. Absolutely great show.
Is he there? I haven't been looking at the set list for every show he's doing, but I have a fair idea of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Is he varying the Van Halen songs at all, or is he just playing the same Van
no
Halen
idea. Probably
keep songs?
Doing the same stuff.
Yeah, because it seems to be a lot of his era. The vast majority is his era, which is what he did when he was in
right.
Van
I mean,
Halen.
He did
anyway.
Do like he did do Jump. And he joked, he said, never thought you'd see the day, huh? And they did Jump. That was actually one of the songs where, and it might have been a little convenient, where Michael took over some vocals and Sammy had all kinds of crap he was trying to sign. But yeah, otherwise it was pretty much going to be the stuff that was from
5150.
You know, 5150, Carnal Knowledge, like it was, you know, that part of the catalog. But it
did
was
a lot
was
of
stellar.
5150, didn't he? Did yeah, good yeah, enough to yeah. title track. When it's Low
Summer Nights. I mean, yeah, all that stuff. Yeah.
It was very heavy on that album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think he played a lot of, there's a lot of For Unawful Carnal Knowledge too, wasn't there?
He also did Judgment Day, and he did some other stuff too. So
did he went off balance?
He did Seventh Seal.
Oh, he did Seventh Seal.
Yeah.
Well, that's a deep one.
So he did some other stuff and on there. But yeah, like I said, just end to end, I just think it was a really good show. And the crowd was definitely like 100% into it. So,
okay.
Yeah, it was great.
So the question I have, and I put this on Facebook, and some people thought it was, one or two people said it was a dumb question, but I didn't think it was, and a lot of people actually said it was a great question. The most intimidating audience for Joe Satriani to play for, do you think it was this one, or do you think it was when he replaced Blackmore and Deep Purple?
Damn, that's a good question.
Because the reason I'm saying it is, so Blackmore quits and the Battle Rages On tour.
Yeah.
They get in Joe to replace him, and he has to finish the tour or do some dates to finish up contractual obligations, right?
Yeah.
Then he comes into this, right? He's playing a load of Van Halen songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, you got all these people who are looking at him saying, is he playing the Van Halen stuff the way they want him to play the Van Halen stuff?
Yeah, and he was for the most part, very true to what Eddie did. And he spent a lot of time at Sammy's studio working with him, learning stuff. He really had the tone dialed in. And there were songs he kicked into where I know he was running through this effect. It was like, oh, I know exactly. I could hear this thing turn on. And I know, yep, he was using that right delay for that period.
Did he have a lot of guitar changes?
He did. For the most part, he was using mostly his Ibanez signatures.
Yeah.
But he did have, for a while, he had one of the EVH Frankensteins he used towards the end, too.
Oh.
I wish he'd taken out the 78 black and white. I know he had it on his rack. It just never came out. But getting back to your question, I actually think that he probably had more eyeballs on him and a greater expectation of him on this tour than he did Deep Purple.
Maybe, but...
And part of that is because of where he ended up, where most of that tour occurred, where he played with Purple as well. So those audiences and stuff. And he wasn't as well known. So if you're not as well known and you walk out and you nail Richie's parts, people go, oh, shit. And people, I don't think, are as focused on the nuances of Blackmore's playing, because you also typically would have John Lord cranking along with him and stuff, too. There's a buffer there where Eddie, his stuff is so different and so iconic, and there's just, people have such a high expectation And also the fact that Eddie's passed away. Blackmore hasn't. The other, I think that adds to it.
The other thing I'd add to that is people would have bought tickets to see Deep Purple expecting Blackmore to play and then Satriani ends up playing. So I think that would have pissed off, you know, the Deep Purple fans, some of them, because they would have said, like, okay, Joe Satriani's a fantastic player, but I want to see fucking Ritchie Blackmore.
Yeah. Oh, I think at that point, too, again, he wasn't as well known. So, because, you know, I've talked to people and I say, oh, yeah, you know, they say, like, who's Satriani? And then I talk about, well, yeah, at one point he filled in for Blackmore and say, huh, really? When did he do that? So I think, it's that similar thing of telling people that, you know, Stevie Ray Vaughan played on Let's Dance. Huh? But I still think this one, because even before this tour went off, there were people that were already like, oh, this is going to suck. And he's going to just be Joe Satriani over the whole top of thing. And he wasn't. He was entirely respectful.
Yeah, but I think a lot.
And I think he enjoyed the shit out of doing it.
I think a lot of that came from people who just don't like the Hagar or Van Halen. Anyway.
Well, there's certainly a lot of that kind of thing, too. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
But another thing that I've seen and read, and I really don't get it at all, is they're on about Hagar. One of the reasons he's doing this is money. And I'm thinking, do you realize how much money Sammy Hagar has
from selling his tequila? Yeah, and he does this like every year.
Yeah.
This is just another summer tour for him.
Hagar does not need the money.
Right.
What is he now, 74, 75?
He's getting up there.
Yeah, and he still sings great.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
2-hour show?
Something close to that. It was one of the best shows I've seen in a while. And granted, I am, I grew up with the Roth era. That is still like my favorite sounding albums and everything else. But I really enjoy the Sammy stuff.
So do I.
And that's Nikki's era. So she was enjoying the shit out of it. So, you know, it was enjoyable. And like I said, they put on a great show with great interaction. And I'll roll back to the interaction part of it later. But that's part of what I like going to a live show too, and seeing a live band interacting. And he's always got great interaction with Mikey as it is. He also, they used Joe's keyboard player from the tour he just did. So we had that guy on keyboards.
On stage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right up on that platform, you had Jason to the left, and this guy was right next to him on the right. And even for Satch Boogie, he did the second guitar on it and stuff and filled it out. And yeah, he did a great job.
So what did they do with Hagar solo? Did they do I Can't Drive 55?
Of course they did.
Does Anyone Way to Rock?
Yeah, so they did like the standard Hagar.
Did they do any Zeppelin stuff?
They didn't do any Zeppelin stuff, but what they did do is they did When Eagles Fly as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
That's a fantastic freaking version of it.
That's off his what? The album came out in 87.
I think it's his last contractual one that he did.
Yeah.
Fantastic version of it. Absolutely fantastic version. It was like, holy shit.
And half the crowd went for a piss when he did it.
Everybody was like, holy shit, he's going to do it.
Did he do it solo, just him and acoustic?
No.
It was the whole band?
I mean, he walks out. It was kind of, you know, obviously from him by himself first, the little keyboard pad. But yeah, then they kick in, and it was great. It was absolutely fantastic.
A band like that with Hagar still singing great, with the talent that's on the stage and the songs that they're going to play, you're just not going to get a fucking bad show.
True.
You're just not.
Yeah.
And
you can tell, though, the other part of it is that they were enjoying it. They were having a shitload of fun up there as well. It wasn't just like another job, another place to play. It was like having a party. And yeah, he did a great job. He really did.
Well, this is probably, I know I'm getting ahead of myself here, but in a lot of ways, this is probably going to bring closure to a lot of the Hagar era Van Halen, because after he's done this now, he's not really going to do this again.
No, he might do something similar.
What I mean is he won't be going out like with Satriani and Bonham. It might be his solo band, and they might only
except for the fact that it's Bonham instead of Chad Smith, it's Chickenfoot.
Yeah.
So it's not like someone he hasn't worked with before.
Who played in Chickenfoot when Chad Smith wasn't in him?
Huh?
Remember Chickenfoot went out on tour and Chad Smith didn't play. They had a different drummer.
They did?
Yeah. Was it Kenny Aronoff?
I've only ever seen them with Chad Smith.
No, they did shows with a different drummer.
Because when they played the first one at the Middle East, it was Chad. And then when they played the Pavilion, it was Chad.
Yeah, no, they did shows without him.
Huh. But it's I totally can see him going back out with this lineup again. And got to remember, too, that over the last year, there's been a lot more focus actually from the label in general. So Record Store Day, they do the Right Here, Right Now live one. Just, you know, a few weeks ago, they put out For an Unlawful Carnal Knowledge. So there's a focus back on some of that Sammy stuff. Also, they did the Van Halen Collection Volume 2, so that has all the Sammy stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think there's that focus on that, and I think it's probably going to continue. That's kind of like a good time for this. So I think it worked out for him, but I definitely think he'll go out. If he can physically do it, he'll go out probably with the same group again.
Mm. So do you think that band The Circle is done?
Well, I mean, The Circle is just with a different guitar player, basically.
Yeah, but do you think they're going to go back out as a Circle then and could, just do the same set?
It could be. I mean, they did Van Halen stuff before too, but I think he was more focused on this to do this stuff.
Yeah,
really focus on that era.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about the show I went to see. I went to see Def Leppard, Journey, and Steve Miller Band
at Fenway.
Yeah. It was the first concert I've been to Fenway Park. Fenway Park's a baseball stadium.
Yep.
Famous baseball stadium in Boston. And I'd never seen a concert there before.
You probably never want to again.
Well, let's talk before I talk about who I saw and who I didn't see. Let's just talk about the venue as a concert venue.
Uh-huh.
Baseball stadiums for concerts, they're weird because they have the stage and just to the right is center field.
Yeah.
And you have the diamond where the bases are is cordoned off. So it just looks weird when you're looking down on the field that there's this whole block on the field that there's nobody on.
Yep.
And everybody is kind of, how would I describe it? They're kind of pushed up against the stage and then there's a little bit of an opening on either side of the stage where, you know, there's a little bit more room. But when you actually get to the stage itself, because the triangle on the diamond is pushing up near the front of the stage. That's the narrow part.
Yeah, and yet odd. You still have full stands all the way
and
around.
All the stands are full.
Yeah.
So you just have this huge area of the field that nobody can go on.
Yep.
And then you're dealing with an old baseball stadium that's like 100 years old where the seats are built in a way that you're actually facing away from the stage and looking at home plate and not center field.
If you don't get the right seat area. Yeah. So like typically, so the last ones that were done there, like the stadium tour for 2022, that one there, if you did it through Def Leppard, like I did, the seats that were initially an offer to you actually gave you that direct facing towards the stage view.
Yeah.
Which they do on purpose.
Yeah.
They like kind of make those available first.
Yeah. So some of the best seats for a baseball game are some of the worst seats for a concert.
Oh, yeah.
They have this thing called the Green Monster, which you can sit up on top of the wall and look right down onto home plate. That you can't even sit up there because you're sitting behind the stage.
Yeah.
So that'll tell you. Oh, yeah. You know, your vantage point for a concert compared to a baseball game.
Yeah.
I didn't see any Steve Miller Band. I had no interest.
Okay.
We got there, me and my wife went, and we got there, I think Journey were one third into their set.
Wow.
And I thought their sound was not good. Really loud. And I've seen this lineup of Journey. This is my fourth time seeing them. And the last time I saw them play was they were on the Eclipse tour in Mansfield where you saw Hagar.
Yeah.
And they were great. And then the time before that was just before I moved here about 13 years ago. They played a lineup in Dublin. It was Def Leppard and then Whitesnake and then Journey and then Tesla.
Mm.
So that was a great night out. And I think Journey had an hour and they were second on the bill. So Whitesnake were on after that and then Leopard headlined.
And who was singing? Was it Steve O'Gary?
No, it was Arnell.
Okay.
And then before that, I saw him just after Arnell had joined. They played the National Stadium in Dublin, which probably holds about 1,000 people. And the band were amazing. Hmm. You could tell that there was new life in the band. You could just tell. They did this, I think Jonathan Cain or Ann Dean or someone, they did a solo section on the stage. And Neil Sean sat right down in front of me and watched him. Huh. Right. And he was just smiling and laughing and, you know, yeah, talking to people. And you could just tell then that there was a great camaraderie there. I got none of that from this show. And I think some of it is...
You sure you weren't waiting for MMA competition?
Yeah. I know some of it is the size of the venue.
Yeah.
That's the other thing about seeing a show in Fenway Park when they have some of it cordoned off. If you're in the stand behind it, you're pretty far away from the stage. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of these outdoor shows now, the temptation is to watch the show on the screen and not watch the band.
Yeah.
Because you can see more on the screen.
Yeah.
Which is understandable, because if you're not actually on the field and they've got this whole section of the field that you can't stand and you're actually behind that,
yeah,
you're further away.
Yeah.
You can't go down on the field and say, right, I want to try and get a little bit closer, because they're only letting a certain amount of people on the field in case people jump over the barriers and try and get onto the diamond part, which is cordoned off. Journey were okay. I know there's a perception out there that there's a lot of shit going on in the band, and we'll get to that in a minute. And maybe that fed into the way I looked at the band performing on the night. But I've seen the band a few times before this. And with that, when I've seen them before, it's always had Ross Valery, who's not in the band anymore.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden they have Todd Jensen, great bass player, right? But he's not Ross Valery.
Yeah.
And they have Jonathan Cain and they have another keyboard player. And then do they have someone in behind the curtain or not? I don't know. But you had Jonathan on one side, you had Dean. See, that's the thing with the normal shows as well, the other shows. You can hardly fucking see the guy.
Yeah.
He's that far back.
Yeah.
And he sang Lights, Dean did, and he was fucking super. He's
yeah,
a great singer.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him before when they had Steve O'Gary with them, and Dean sang Faithfully.
Yeah, I saw Dean, the first time I saw Journey, Dean sang and played drums to Mother Father. And he was fucking awesome. I couldn't believe how good he was. And I'm thinking, you have that guy as a backing vocalist and a drummer like that. No
yeah.
wonder he's in your fucking band.
Yeah.
But the band were good. Like, Jonathan would say something and then Arnell might say, he'd sing a song and then Arnell might say something and then Neil would go down and he'd fucking wank around on his guitar for 5 minutes doing this solo, and every song they played, you know, it's the same fucking 12, 13 songs. You know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Right, so they played that couple of solos. Jonathan Cain did this keyboard solo, which is an absolute fucking waste of fucking time. I'm listening to him and I'm like, just play another fucking song.
Yeah.
And I know you're probably giving Arnell a break or something, but, you know, Arnell sounded good.
But you feel like you're listening to Emerson, Lake and yeah, what the fuck.
Yeah. But what I'm thinking is, right, Neil, you get a solo, so I have to get a solo. You know, that kind of a thing. Like, nobody goes to Journey to hear Jonathan Cain play a keyboard solo.
Right.
Nobody, except Jonathan fucking Cain.
Yeah.
Right? Neil, I can understand. Neil is an iconic guitar player.
Yeah.
You know, brilliant guitar player, great soloist, right?
Yeah.
But even he was over-soloing. I was like, come on, just play tunes, play songs, right? So at the end of their set, and I turned around to my wife and I said, right, are they going to come out and bow? Because they walked down to the front and Arnell is probably, what, 5'2"?
On a good day.
And Arnell was in the middle. He had Jonathan on one side and Neil on another. And I think it was the day before they'd announced that Kane had sued Sean again.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, of all the guys you want in between the two of them and when they're bowing, you have the smallest guy probably in the fucking stadium, right? But they came down, they did their bow and they fucked off. And then, of course, this thing with Kane and Sean is blown up again.
Yeah.
Sean's addressed it. You know, Kane's on about Sean overspending, and it's just messy. They're in the middle of a tour. They cancelled the UK and Irish tour. Did you see that?
No.
They cancelled it. Not postponed it. Cancelled.
Yeah.
So it looks like they're going to do this tour, and then they've some dates in Japan, and then they had the UK and Ireland scheduled after that. Kaput. Cancelled the tour. You know, unforeseen circumstances or whatever fucking excuse.
They'll call it unforeseen.
Yeah. So, of course, this thing is going on again about, you know, Kane suing Sean. And this is what happens. It's the business gets in the way.
Yeah.
And the only thing, I think, keeping those guys together is money. I don't think there's any... When those guys get off the stage now, I don't think they say a word to each other unless it's at a business meeting and there's lawyers present.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And it's sad, but... And then they put on the big smiles and it's like Motley Crue when they come together for the big hug after Home Sweet Home. It's as fake as fuck, right? And I think, you know, I'm not saying all the bands are like that, but I think at this stage we have a fair idea now of when the bands do that. We know whether there's anything genuine about it at all.
Yeah.
But would it, you know, I haven't seen Journey in, when did Eclipse come out? 2013. I've no real desire to ever see them again.
Yeah.
They were okay. I knew all the songs. I've seen that band do them better before.
Yeah.
And then Leopard came on, and one of the main reasons I went was they were playing songs. They were actually playing songs that they hadn't played in a while, and they were playing one song that they hadn't played before live, which is Coming Under Fire from Pyromania.
Yeah.
I've seen Leopard 12 or 13 times.
Yeah.
So I've seen them play the songs 12 or 13 times, more or less, right?
Yeah.
So they came on, they ended up doing 7 Pyromania songs. The ones they didn't do was Stage Fright, which I was hoping they'd do, but it's probably too high for Joe to sing. They didn't do Action Not Words, and they didn't do Billy's Got a Gun. But they did everything else.
Oh, cool.
So they did Coming Under Fire they were pulling that out for the first time ever on the tour. Once they finished Die Hard the Hunter, I knew what was left, and I went home. Because I missed Photograph, Pour Some Sugar on Me, Hysteria, and Rock of Ages.
Yeah.
Which I've heard them play on every single tour before.
Yeah.
So I got what I wanted in the first 10 songs. And the band were fantastic. I thought
they usually are.
Yeah. They are professional as fuck.
Yeah. When I saw them in whatever fucking year that was, opening for Blackfoot on Lansdowne, you know, they were solid. They were even as kids, they were professional.
But the band sounded really good. Now, Joe, I thought Joe sounded good. Was he 1987 Joe? No. Was he 1999 Joe? No.
No, but they've adjusted, and he's accepted that.
Yeah. But you could tell it was him singing.
Yeah.
There was none of this fucking backing track, you know, on lead vocal bullshit.
No, they pride themselves on that. And they've got other good vocalists. I mean, Phil's good, you know, I mean...
Vivian.
Vivian's good. They've got great backing vocals.
Yeah. They did that just like 73. Not great. Kind of went down like a lead balloon with most people, but they played it.
Well, I mean, it just came out too. What, last week?
Yeah.
Week before?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think when it rolled in the mailbox, but yeah.
But I'm going to go off on a rant now.
Oh, shit. Focus!
Because we've seen this. So I'm sitting with my wife, and there's a mother and father in front of me, and then I think it was their daughter and boyfriend in front of them, and they'd had a couple of beers in them, and I think between the four of them, the two albums they had by those two bands were Def Leppard's Greatest Hits and Journey's Greatest Hits, right? And I'm not lying.
No, I'm laughing at that.
So when they did when they did Animal, Love Bites, Armageddon, it, Rocket, yeah. all the singles,
yeah.
they went absolutely fucking apeshit.
Could right? also be the, all the MTV, yeah. right? Those all videos for those too, right?
Yeah.
Was it one for Armageddon? It?
Yeah, it was a single.
Yeah, I don't remember what the video was, but yeah. it could be that.
No, but the daughter and the boyfriend yeah. were probably in their early 20s.
Oh, okay.
Right. So the girlfriend and the boyfriend, they were fucking going mad, like Love Bites, Bring Me to My Knees. She got down on her knees in front of him. And I was there to my wife. I'm like, for fuck's sake, you know, I just want to watch the fucking concert, right? When they played Coming Under Fire,
yeah.
when any of that stuff, sat down. Right. And I'm like, they played Die Hard the Hunter and I'm yeah. fucking singing it all and they're looking at me. And I'm like, this is on the album that sold fucking 10 million as well.
Yeah.
You know, and then they'd get up and they'd do, I don't know what fucking song they did, but they'd be fucking jumping up and down and then they'd do like, I don't know, one of the, what are lesser known songs yeah. and then they'd sit right back down and I'm like, for fuck's sake. But, you know, there's a lot of people and that's what they go for and good for you. But I'm there at this stage to hear the obscure shit.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, when they played all the hits, they're still doing fucking great and I still really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to get more out of Die Hard the Hunter. I'm going to get more out of Coming Under Fire.
Yeah.
I get more out of that now than I do Animal.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm glad they do stuff like that. But Journey don't do any of that.
Yeah.
It's all the fucking Stone in Love, Lights, fucking,
yeah.
you know, Don't yeah. Stop Believing.
Don't stop believing.
You know, Journey could have come on stage and played Don't Stop Believing and left, and 80% of the people would have been thrilled.
Yeah.
They heard what they wanted to hear.
No, I mean, that's the audience, right? That's part of why the music business is how it is.
Yeah.
Right? People, that's what they want to hear.
But it was, I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
I'm glad Leprechaun can still do it. They're a band that I definitely go see again live. I think over the years I've seen them more, even though I've seen them more than anyone else, I don't think I've ever seen them play a bad show.
Yeah.
And I've seen them play in a club in Dublin in front of 500 or 600 people.
Yeah.
And I've seen them play in front of 25,000 people.
Yeah.
And they still put on the same fucking show.
Yeah.
Just a
yeah.
fucking great band.
Yeah. Yeah. They're, I think they'll go, going to be probably be doing it for as long as they possibly can. And it looks like they all friggin' like each other. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
and they've been through a lot. And I think as a unit, they've overcome all that shit that's happened to them along the way, with, you know, drummers losing arms and members dying and having to put members out to pasture because they can't handle it. And
but they've had the same lineup since 92.
You know, so it's, I think, yeah, they do well. And like, yeah, they've got a great, you know, great front of house people. Sound mix is done well.
Yeah. But
things are dialed in.
It was stark, the difference in sound.
Uh-huh.
Like, I know you always talk about the Motley thing, that yep. the sound was shit. And then yep. Leopard came on. But, oh, the other thing about Leopard, one of my favorite Def Leppard songs is Gods of War.
Uh-huh.
Before the band came on stage, they did that fucking dramatic symphonies version of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why the fuck, just play the fucking song. I've been waiting since the 92 to go to a gig and see them play that. They've only ever played it once when I've been to a show.
I've heard that live from them.
Yeah, but what I think what they'll do on some tours, that'll be one of the songs they switch around.
Yeah.
And I've just looked out
I know I've heard that live.
I've looked out
times.
That it hasn't been the show.
Yeah.
It's been the show that I've gone to that
yeah.
they're playing the other song.
Okay. Nah.
Like, I think this for a while they did switch that with Paper Sun from Euphoria because they're both like 5 or 6 minute epics.
Yeah.
And I get Paper Sun and I'm like, it's a great song. But fuck.
Nah.
So let's talk about the other show you went to.
Oh, yeah, Metallica. So, yeah, that was the opening night of the next leg of the M72 Foxborough. I did have tickets for both nights. I ended up letting my buddy Jeff do the second night instead. Just kind of as much as I like Metallica, And as much as I probably would have liked to have seen Five Finger Death Punch on the second night, dealing with Gillette two nights in one weekend is, I don't know, it rots your freaking brain. But we did, we kind of made it a whole weekend. So we pulled the camper down. There's a campground in Foxborough, probably 3 miles away from the stadium. So we parked our ass there Thursday night. And
was there many there? So many there on the Thursday night?
Well, at the campground.
Yeah. Was there many at the campground?
Oh, yeah. That place is always sold out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, is it sold out anyway?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. There were, you could tell they were Metallica folks that were there because people had Metallica flags out and stuff like that. But that place is always sold out. It's always sold. It's,
okay.
The trip we took in July, we had to book that a year in advance.
Oh, shit.
Part of that was that I knew they were going to do the pop-up store. So that was that pop-up store. And a lot of bands are doing that. AC/DC has been doing that through the Power trip tour through Europe. They've been announcing pop-up stores. So Metallica did that. They took an empty storefront in Patriots Place, and they had it running Thursday through Sunday from 10 to 4. So I knew they had a limited poster for the gig, and then they had a limited edition vinyl in Patriots splatter.
They're always limited, aren't they?
And these were like literally the poster sold out. The Friday bucket of posters. Like I saw behind the curtains, the box labeled Friday, and two people in front of me, and they sold out in line. And when we were in, so when we got there, and we got there at like, 9:30, 20 past nine, the line was already a quarter mile long. And once they opened, everybody was coming out with the same thing, vinyl and poster. Everybody, vinyl, poster. Because they'd all walk out, you'd have the tube, the vinyl.
All right. How much was each?
I don't remember. Poster I didn't end up getting. So I think the vinyl was like, I want to say it was 45, 50 bucks.
What vinyl of what now?
Of
the album?
M7, yeah, of the new album.
72 Seasons. Yeah.
And now those vinyls?
Here we go. eBay, 200 each.
Keep going.
Okay.
Before the weekend was over, I saw them listed for 300 and up.
I hate bastards to do that.
But you're only limited. You can only get one.
Ah, okay.
Same thing with the poster. What people were doing, though, was, and I figured, I was like, I should have freaking done this when I got in there.
Bring your kids with you.
No, people were going in and immediately getting in line, buying, because they took a whole storefront. It was nothing but Metallica stuff. So all the shirts, everything. So we went in and was like, oh, well, we're going to check out the shirts. We're going to do this. Nick was like, why don't you get in line? Get in line. I'm like, no, we'll. And what people were doing, though, they were getting in line and buying poster and the vinyl, then going back out into the store and browsing everything else, and then getting back in line with and buying whatever else they wanted so they could do it. But yeah, two people in front of me, I looked one way because they had two piles, and I looked and I saw that pile disappear, and I was like, oh, well, we still got the other. No, I don't.
So you queued for nothing?
No, I still got the vinyl. We still got some shirts.
You didn't get the poster.
And we didn't get the poster.
Okay.
And that was, limited hand, like the ones I got in the hallway.
What is it? A poster to band and a poster?
No, like it's a separate poster. They're making a separate hand-printed, screen-printed
poster. Show with the date on it. Is it a concert
and
poster?
And a design, and it's that design for that day of that show, period. Okay. So there's one for the second. There's a totally different poster for the fourth. Same thing when the next date's in Chicago.
What is it, a 36 by 24?
So it's like a 24 by 36 poster. Yeah, all
big
silk screen poster.
All right.
Then in the merch, they had another poster that was a printed poster. Again, though, limited. Same thing. In this case, it was like a skeletal Patriot that they had. Different design for the second and for the fourth. And those like sold out really quick too. But it's something that, Metallica's been starting to try to do. So we went and did that. We got some shirts.
On the Friday you did it, right?
Yeah, Friday morning, figuring, oh, you know what? We'll go Friday morning. I'll get my vinyl, which is the thing I probably wanted the most. Got my vinyl. And we'll buy the shirts, any shirts we like. Then we don't have anything to carry on the show. So we just be hands-free. Be great. But we got there, so a little bit before we were supposed to leave Friday night, it freaking poured. And we're like, all right, well, we'll hang for a little bit. It's just down the road. I have a reserve parking spot. No problem. So if it got, finally it got better. And remember, too, it was hot, humid. It was miserable out. So we got down there shortly before Mammoth went on. So we were able to go down. Once I was, we were in the concourse, I realized, oh, shit, there's a day-only Foxbro shirt that wasn't in the store. And it might have been that actually when we were in line, like FedEx or UPS pulled up, and they were delivering tons of boxes all marked Gildan. So it could have even been that they stocked those in the store after we were gone. But I was like, shit, now I got to buy one of those.
$50 probably.
Ah, 45.
40, yeah, sure. Even a, rounded up to 50.
So it's so, and I like those show shirts that are just for that date. So I wanted to grab one of those. So it was like, shit. So now we're carrying around. We got disposable rain ponchos that we had on standby just in case, because we weren't going to leave. We're just going to throw the ponchos on and continue on. And so now we had those and shirts, but we had enough time to like grab a bite to eat, load up on water and Gatorade because it was, like I said, it was just dripping hot. And then got down to our seats. Fortunately, having an aisle seat is nice when it's like steaming hot.
You weren't on the field, were you?
No.
Okay.
No. I was just up on the first tier. I got legacy member seats. So, and I had a nice end of the aisle. Great. So I could move aside and have some airspace and shit. Cool people around us, which was awesome as well, which is always nice. You know, guy in front of me, massive Van Halen fan. We were talking Van Halen. Guy next to us by himself. His wife didn't really like the music. He seemed like a good guy, chatting about shit. Seemed pretty knowledgeable. Really, he's like, and Bruce Dickinson was like his big thing. But just like,
what, hold on, nice what, wife didn't like any of the music?
Yeah, he just went by himself.
Wait, oh, I thought she was there.
No.
Oh, okay,
no.
Good
he
for
went
him
by
then.
Himself.
Because that'd be fucking miserable.
So we said no, it was good. We had nice people around us. So during the daylight, you know, Mammoth comes on. Now remember, and this is where I go to the interaction thing. So, you know, we just saw them in October at Big Night Live on a small stage, so damn tight, interacting with each other. And now to see them on this giant stage.
In the daylight.
And even if it wasn't, daylight had nothing to do with it. It was more this giant, because remember, it's a ring. It's a big ring at midfield at Gillette.
Yeah.
And so you've got each one of the band members is in a different spot on the ring. They are far apart from each other. So there is no interaction with each other whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it made a big difference in... They were still spot on the songs, but they didn't have that same energy because they weren't interacting with each other mm-hmm. that you normally would have had. Because you could see these guys and doing the, you know, watching them in sound check and all, they, you know, they genuinely like to play with each other. They're all high energy, and it just be all separated on this giant ring. And it's not like a level ring. It undulates too. So then Pantera, still daylight, Pantera comes out. And like I said, it's miserable hot. So like Phil, he comes out, flip-flops, gets up on the stage, takes his flip-flops off. Okay. Goes out and he's dripping. But again, it's very little interaction. Now they had two drum sets set up for Charlie. And so he did part of the set on one drum set. And then he went over and did the other half of the set on the other drum set. Mammoth didn't have that. They just had one drum set and that was it. But he was able to go from one to the other, but they were still at kind of one end of the field. And then...
How long did Pantera play for? An hour?
It was like about an hour, yeah.
They got an hour.
So it was
with them, because they only have an hour, it's greatest hits. You're not going to get any deep cuts from great Southern Strangkill.
No, it's pretty much all stuff everybody knows. You know, there was a little bit of, you'd have a spot where it might be that Rex goes and jams with Zach a little bit or something like that. Phil was constantly walking around, which was nice. But again, it was like the separation. But they did good. And you could see a kind of a level of, you could definitely see this whole thing, kind of like your whole thing about the family in front of you, right? Where there were people that just were sitting through Mammoth And I've got like a picture on my phone of this big woman just behind Wolfgang. And like, could you be more miserable, lady? Really? And then, and the same thing with Pantera, there was like people that were kind of like, and then, you know, once Darkness hit Metallica, then everybody was more like, oh, okay, you know, we're there. But again, the same thing with Metallica, I think they did a good song selection. They did like three cuts off of the new album, which was pretty cool. And they did, I think they did two off the Black, three off of Masters.
What did you get off Master of Puppets? Because they're playing two different sets, right? Did you get the title track? Did you get Master of Puppets?
I don't even remember which ones they did.
Okay.
I'd have to look it up. And remember, it's a no repeat, too.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're doing two different sets.
Yeah.
Completely different sets.
Yes.
Yeah, so I'm just wondering what Master songs you got the first night.
So when I turned off to save, Richie asked about Ride. And so Creeping Death was actually the first song they did. They did Creeping Death, Harvester, Leper Messiah, King Nothing, title track off of 72 Seasons. If Darkness Had a Son off of 72.
Yeah.
The Day That Never Comes, Shadows Follow, Orion, Nothing Else Matters, Sad But True, Hardwired, Fuel, Seek and Destroy, and they ended with Master Puppets.
Only one song off the Load Records.
And they also did...
Nothing off Saint Anger.
No, nothing off Lulu either, thank freaking God.
hold on, did they play anything off Kill 'Em All? Whiplash?
Yeah. Seek and Destroy.
Oh, Seek and Destroy.
We bolted right before Master, too. Because knowing how they triply construct their set, I was like, now's the time to jet. Yeah, I think it was a pretty good balanced set, although Nikki was like, shit, I wish we'd gone to night two. I like that set better. No covers. They did it, and they did do Rob and Kirk rather than like a solo thing. Rob and Kirk went out and just did like a jam.
Okay.
And they constructed a song called Foxbro on the Run. Now, what was cool and what was like this like orgasmic moment for me was Kirk has Greeny out on tour with him.
Oh, the guitar. Yeah.
And it's one thing when he's playing Greeny on a Metallica song. I mean, the guitar always sounds awesome. But for this Foxborough on the Run, it was essentially him and Rob doing a blues jam. So to hear Kirk playing electric blues on the guitar that was instrumental in electric blues was, for me, as a guitarist, phenomenal. And it sounded so good. A lot of the people around me, they had no, like...
Was the show sold out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was packed.
Really?
It was packed. And again, though, the thing, too, is, you know, they're using that ring. And I was a little disappointed because for Pantera, Rex had his wireless mic. For Metallica, there were mics stationed all around the ring.
Yeah.
So James, theoretically, could have gone to any mic at any time to sing and play. But he didn't. He would sing at a mic for a bunch of songs, then go to another mic for a bunch of songs, and he would make his way around. They were also, interestingly, doing that for the drums. So Lars started off at one spot, and a quarter of the way through, the drums move to another quadrant, and he plays there. And then a quarter of the way, another move. And then finally, at the end of the show, he's in front of us. So that was pretty cool that they were able to do something where they would move Lars around, which was great. But it was like, you guys have the ability to just move yourselves all around this thing at any time. Why don't you freaking do it?
There's a lot to be said for having the stage at the end of a stadium.
You know, so they
didn't. So everybody is facing you.
Right.
I know the round thing is cool. I've seen a couple of shows with it, but.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in an enormous stadium like that, You can get lost.
It was nice. And you know, they did the round stuff before, and they've utilized it, I thought, better. The other added thing, remember, is they have the snake pit. So James could be at one corner of it, and he's singing to the seats. Then he turns around and sings to the snake pit for a song.
Yeah.
So now you got like a huge chunk of the stadium that his back's to it. And I just thought, well, geez, you've got all everything distributed. Walk around, use different mics. But they just didn't do that. So again, you got this killer band and there just wasn't a lot of interaction with each other.
Okay.
It's kind of like, you'd want to have that and feed off each other and look at each other and all that. And granted, I can understand some of the not moving around as much because it was so freaking hot. And you would just sweat pouring off of them and stuff, which has got to be just even playing when you're that hot is miserable because you're trying to move your hands on a guitar neck. It's getting sticky. It doesn't want to go. It sucks.
What was the stage show like as far as lights and stuff?
It was minimal? Good question. Very minimal. So I'll show you pictures, but they had 8 huge towers around this ring. And on the top of the towers were round video screens.
So again, you could be watching the fucking show just looking at the screen.
Well, they weren't always, they were displaying things like during fuel, it was like engine pistons were on the screen.
Okay.
And they had things like that. They had some of the, during like the load stuff, that was kind of the video stuff was more like an Anton Corbin kind of thing to go with the artwork of the, you know what I mean? So it wasn't just like, there was more of additional video on the screens versus the band on the screens.
Yeah.
So it just added to it. And actually, before they went on, made you
have to watch the band.
Yeah. And before they went on, so initially those things had the M72 yellow and black silhouette, and the silhouette of the city was the silhouette of Boston.
Okay.
Then right before they went on, that changed to the tour poster for that night on every screen. And then once it kicked into Ecstasy of Gold, it had the scenes from the movie playing until they went on. But the screens were pretty well used. It was pretty interesting how they did that. There was nothing over the stage at all. So you simply had the ring. You had these 8 tower pods. There were some lights around the edge of Foxborough. And each one of these tower pods had some lights. And there were some lights on the edges of the stage. But most of any of the downlighting came from these towers. And it wasn't like huge, it wasn't huge light show. So it was a relatively dark show. And they didn't do pyro until fuel.
Yeah.
So right towards the end, which is where I was like, okay, they're pulling out all the things. So they did that. And then they had one row of seats at every one of those towers. And they had people that were in those seats, which are great seats to see the show. But I noticed all of a sudden they cleared everybody off of every single tower. So I'm like, huh, okay. So something's going to happen with those towers. And then James came out, he was talking, and he said something about beach balls. And he goes, hey, you know, just so you know, these beach balls, because of where we are, we've deflated them a little bit. And just kind of a Patriots dig. And so then when they launch into that song, then these towers, they released these beach balls that were huge. And they've been doing this now for every couple of tours. I know they had purple ones for Death Magnetic tour and stuff. And so they just had these things. People were tossing them around. And then after those kind of cleared off, people got to go back in their seats. So it was, like I said, overall, it was a very minimal type of production, which, well, okay, I guess with the size of it, you know, might be a good decision. So
yeah,
it was pretty good. And then I know that Jeff said that Sunday was really good too. They had really bad weather Sunday, because I know at one point I got the alert to say,
is Ice Kills 9 on that show, tour?
That was a Sunday show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because one of the recent concerts, they couldn't even come out.
Yeah.
I can't remember where it was because of the weather. Didn't even play, I think, and I don't know who's a Five Finger Death Punch.
Yeah.
No interest in them.
Almost everything they've done.
Yeah.
So that one, they had the weather rolled in. They had, you know, Shelter in Your Cars, Shelter in the Concourse, and so that started late because the weather just it blew in and it was like, oh, geez, it's gonna be bad.
Yeah.
I thought it was a actually really good show. And
Metallica don't put on bad shows either.
No, I really haven't seen a bad one from them. I just, like I said, the one downer for me I mean, besides the fact that it was so fucking miserable hot. It was we were just chugging water and Gatorade. And as soon as we got, thank God we were just down the road, because it was like we shot down Route 1, and obviously everything was cordoned off, so we couldn't bang the turn into the campground. So we had to go past 495, make sure we didn't have any stadies around, wing around and go back up. But as soon as we hit the campground, it was like showers. Like it was miserable. But it was that interaction thing, because, you know, seeing them on the other tours, even the St. Anger tour, there was a lot more interaction with that big stage. Granted, that was in the Garden. It wasn't in Gillette.
I was just about to mention that, yeah. Like, now they're a stadium act.
Yeah.
That's the other thing that I have a reluctance to go to see stadium shows now, because take the price out of it, because it's fucking ridiculous. But a lot of these musicians now are old. Mm. They can't move around as much, and you're seeing them in these fucking enormous stages.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't come across to me.
Yeah.
The same as if it was in an arena.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when they're in the round.
Yeah.
Where they can walk anywhere on the stage. At least with an arena, you know, the stage is in one area and, you know, they have to face you.
Yeah.
All of the band to play the show.
Yeah.
All the Metallica guys are in their 60s now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, it's, you know, age is catching up with them. And the stage is big. Like, all these stages are huge now.
Yeah, I agree. It's probably also another reason why they kind of did the smart thing of they're going to do these limited runs, and they're going to put a night between the shows as well. You know, it makes sense.
Mm.
And like I said, the weather, and yeah, it was brutally just hot, humid, just miserable.
What's your next arena or stadium show? Is it Maiden, or have you got someone before that?
Well, before that, I do have, it's not an arena or a stadium, it's a theater, but it's KK's Priest and Accept.
Oh, you're going to the Tupelo?
No, Wilbur.
Oh, they're in Boston.
Yeah.
Okay, they're in the Tupelo.
Yeah, Nikki got seats the first, well, in true Nikki style. She bought two sets of tickets and said, pick which ones you want to use. So I did. And so one she did was very close to the stage, but on the floor. But you're at the Wilbur. So you're going to be doing, you'll be doing this. Like watching a seated show at Hampton Beach. And then the other one she did was right on the balcony, the first row.
Take that one.
So, and there's this weird wall, but it's like, yeah, but I'm tall. The wall's not going to bother me.
Yeah.
So I said, let's do the balcony, Nick. So, yeah. So we're doing KK's Priest and Accept in September. So that'll be cool. And then the next one currently we have after that is Maiden at
in
the
November.
DCU. Yeah.
That's sold out.
I don't know. I know that the dude who was sitting next to us, he's going to that too. He's like, are you going to go? I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like, all got excited. That's how I knew about the whole Dickinson thing. He was like raving about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll see what's coming up.
Huh.
We've nothing planned.
All right. Well, anyway, it's, you know, it's pretty cool. We can just, yeah, discuss about what we've been going to see, like kind of that state of the live stuff. So it's, I think it's pretty varied between what you've seen and what I've seen on that. Although they are kind of bigger tours, but, yeah. So, I think maybe we can, we'll wrap this one up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that we have next week, you have an interview you did with a young, can I call him up and coming musician with, Drew Cagle.
Well, he's 23. So up and coming. Yeah.
And it's the, what is it? Drew Cagle and the Bad Reputation. Is
yeah,
that what
I believe
it is?
That's what it is. Yeah.
So that's what's in store for you on the next Focus on Metal. Will be a great interview with an up-and-coming, very cool, very kind of an old soul in
a
way.
He's got good parents.
Yeah.
Which you'll find out about next week.
All right. So, anyways, you've heard about our what the hell did Scott and Richie do in July and beginning of August. At least concert-wise. So that's it for this week. There ain't no more. Stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself and...
me.
Thanks for listening. And until we talk to you again next time, as always, remember...
Focus on Metal!
Everything else is insignificant. significant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.